We have a handout tonight. We have been going in a series. Actually, the pastoral staff did the first couple months, just kind of along our theme with reaching and teaching them. And I wanted to make sure after as we go through this that we look at some of our ministries. And I want you to understand some thoughts, some principles, some things that will help us with it. And tonight, I know Brother Ross, I think when we first started in January, he talked about the teen ministry. He's been our youth director forever. And I think before he was youth director, I was the youth director. And that's, to be honest with you, that's why I don't have any hair. I was the youth director for several years. And those were wonderful days. Love teenagers. And I love that Brother Ross loves teenagers. Let's look at some verses here tonight. Psalm chapter 78, verses 1 to 8. Give ear, O my people, to my law, incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their generation, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he hath established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and may not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright, and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. In this psalm, Asaph is seeking to remind God's people of their mistakes in the past. And he's very detailed, and he goes through it after these verses. How they forgot God's working. How they thought that they could disobey God and get away with it. And then the judgment that came their way because of it. The reason he told them this, because it would be vital to the assurance that they would continue on serving God and experiencing his blessings. God had told them long before he ever brought them into the promised land, here's what I expect you to do. Here's how you're going to do things. If you don't do things, you will be cursed and you will sin and I will bring judgment upon you. If you do these things, I will bless you. I will take care of you. I will establish you in the land. And of course, we saw that they did not. But this is what Asaph is trying to communicate. That if they did not obey God and they repeated the mistakes of their fathers, they too would experience the dreadful consequences that their fathers experienced. One way that would be averted, and this is important, is if they made sure that their children, the next generation, understood that. That was the vital part. They didn't have a lot of different types of communication. It was very vital that this generation of fathers and parents communicated to the next generation so that they got it and they can communicate and it can go on down the line, which, if you read the law books at all, you see that that didn't really happen. So he says a few things in these verses. He reminds them that they had learned these truths from their fathers, and that was in verse 3. Fathers tried to tell you this. He requires of them that they teach it to their children, and then he instructs them that if the children get it, they will pass it on to the next generation. He relates what will happen to that next generation. He says, if they get it, they will hope in God, they'll remember God's work, and they'll obey God, and they will follow his will. But his whole motivation is, get it to the next generation. Make sure they understand it. Make sure the children and the young people are getting it. Now, as I think about that, and I think about what we're trying to do when it comes in relation to our young people here, I want to give us some practical thoughts, okay? I want us to understand this. We need to be on the same page as a family and a church if we're going to be able to make a difference. And I wanted you to kind of understand some things, and then I'll just give you some practical thoughts. And some of those are not new, and some of them are not extremely popular, and that's okay. We're just trying to work together here. Number one, the next generation is vital to the continuation of the church and biblical Christianity. The next generation, okay? They have got to get it. One of these days, those of us who are a little bit older, there's a few of us, we'll be gone. And what happens to Christianity is going to be determined by if the next generation is getting it. If they don't get it, it's not going to be passed on. It's going to be very, very tragic. And by the way, we are kind of seeing that in this country here. As Christianity has been diluted, it seems each generation of Christianity in our country hands down a watered-down Christianity to the next generation. And it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Now it's to the point where we don't even think or feel that young people, we don't give them enough credit, I guess. By the way, if you know anything about the history of our church was basically built and started, not built, I don't like that word, but you know what I'm saying, by teenagers, young people. We had the Khmer department, but it was our young people. If you would have come to our church in the early days, it was very easy to do a building addition in those days. We got some metal rods, and we welded them together into little squares, and we put a tarp on the side and in between them, and we had brand new Sunday school classrooms. And if you would have come over to the building over on Anaheim, we had to put metal sheets up so we didn't get shot, which happened. And so up against the wall, we had all these different Sunday school classrooms. If you came on a Sunday morning and you looked who was teaching it, I'll just be honest with you. The majority of them were teenagers. And the ones who weren't teenagers were 19, 20, and 21-year-olds. Why? You know what? They can do something for God. Teenagers, you can do something for God. And so the next generation is vital. Let's not think that they can't do it. The verses here in Psalm chapter 127 says, "Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty one, so are children of the youth." Now, my question is this: who are they arrows for? Not the parents. There are arrows for the Lord. And so we have children, we have teenagers, and they're the next generation. So we want to make sure that we're working with them. Number two, we all need help with our children and families. All of us need help. None of us have all the answers. It's like I say, you know, if someone thinks they have all the answers, they don't even know all the questions, okay? We don't have all the answers. And it's nice to work together collaboratively to help to reach our families and our children. By the way, the majority of the adults in this room did not grow up in Christian homes. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, okay? Grew up in a broken home. And I did. I went to church the first time, I think, fifth grade. And the second time I went, I was in high school. I just didn't go. It was just not what we did. And so I didn't grow up in there. So, you know, the best way to see how to have a Christian family, the best way is to really to see it modeled in the family that you have. But a lot of us didn't have that. And so we're kind of, as I say, we're behind the eight ball. We're a little bit behind when it comes to that. And so we need to be learning it and growing it. And it helps if we have help with our families. What do I mean? The parents, church, and the school must all work together. Let me give you three thoughts with that. Letter A, let's work with the school and not against it. Now, you're saying, is your school perfect? No. Why? Because it's run by people. People aren't perfect. Okay, by the way, there is no perfect school. And by the way, there is no perfect church. Okay, there isn't. Now, we are doing our best. And so we want to work together with the children. Okay, we want to work with the families. We're not, you know, our school is not trying to go against families. Right? That's not, but we work together. By the way, if ever there's a question, what we do is we go talk to the school or talk, if we think there's a question about something. And by the way, you know, sometimes people come and they want to ask about something. They're like, well, why didn't you come about and talk? If that was bothering you, why didn't you talk about that earlier? Well, you know, I didn't want to bother you. You know, that's not a bother. It's not. There's something bothering somebody, I would want them to come talk to me and just not let it fester. Same thing with the school. We work together. By the way, our school, those that work at our school, they're sacrificing. They're not getting rich doing this. And so they're doing it because they love the children. Now, they're not perfect. I understand that. But if we work together and not against each other, I'm not going to be mean tonight. I'm not. That's not my purpose. I would say this, please don't fight the rules and the boundaries. See, the rules and the boundaries are there to, in the formative age, as they're younger, to kind of help keep them on the path until they're mature adults and they can start making right decisions for themselves. You know, and look, some of the things, it's like, it's not a sin. You have to wear certain color clothes, okay, at certain times. That's not a sin, that's a uniform. Okay, and we're not, you know, if your kid wears the wrong color shoes, they're not going to hell. They're not rebel. It just, okay. But it's, we have to have rules. Let's not fight those. And let me just say this. The worst thing we can do as parents is if we feel there's an issue to let our kids know that we are against the school. Now, by the way, kids are brilliant. Three-year-olds. I'm talking about three-year-olds. They know if they have a wedge somewhere, they're going to take it, right? There's nothing wrong with going and talking to the teacher and saying, hey, you know, I was kind of concerned about this. Can we work on this? None of our teachers are going to blow you out of the water. It's your kids. We understand you're the parents. We want to work with you. And so let's work together. Never be ashamed to talk, to work things out, to give suggestions. We're never against that. Letter B, work with the church and not against it. It's sad when someone feels there's an issue between them and the church and will not discuss it with someone. You know, the thing that over the years working here is, and no matter what church you're in, there's people that leave the church or whatever, but you know, someone has an issue or something, they go away and something was hurting them or bothering them and they never talk to anybody about it. We're always looking to get better, by the way, yes. And so let's work together. And we have rules with the stuff with the children in the church because church is vitally important. And then I'll say on the other side of it, so you don't think it's just letter C, the church and the school work with the parents and not against them. Okay? And we'll get to this in point three. They're your children, not mine. They're your children. They're not the school's. When you entrust your children to our school, we have rules and so forth, but we understand they're your children. We're not trying to go against your parental authority. We're trying to work with you. And so we'll work at that. And again, if there's ever any issues, let's talk together. Let's work that out. Let's not let something fester. Number three, the reason being, the parents must be the ultimate example and promoter of Christianity for their children. Other than a relationship with God, one of the most important elements in the spiritual development of your teen or your children, but we're talking about teens tonight, is the parents. You are vitally important. When you're in service, when we're in school or whatever it is, we're just trying to reinforce what we feel, the scriptural principles, which we hope that you also want for your children. Okay? That's what we're looking for. They did a study, and I've mentioned this before, about children, teenagers in the church, and whether or not they will turn out for God. What families do they come from? Here's what the study showed. The best teenagers in the church, higher percentage, who turned out right, came from a family where the parents were involved with the church and they were solid, devoted Christians. Best ones. The second best were those who came from families who didn't go to church. most cases, may not even be Christians. By far, the worst ones in the church, struggle in their faith. Worse is maybe makes, but they struggle in their faith after they grow. Come from families where the parents come to church, but they just don't live, they don't seek to live their faith outside of the church. See, parents, you're the number one influence. The school is not going to steal your children away from you. They're not. They're your children. And so you need to be the number one promoter of the faith in your family. It's you. That's your responsibility. What the church does, now we're supposed to be here as Christians and learn the word and all that other stuff, but if you want to take it from a standpoint of your children, church or the school, we're here to be a supplement and a help with you, working with you. But you're the main one. Your example is the best influence they can have. Your example in spending time with God. Your example in faithfulness to church. Your example in generosity of life. Trying to just genuinely live out your faith. Nothing can replace parents as a great influencer in their children's lives. Now, occasionally, some children, as I mentioned, they have parents who maybe aren't on board at all, some not even saved, and by the grace of God, through their salvation, they're able to make it. But the biggest determining factor is the parents. Now, if some of you are out there say, I don't have parents like that. Listen, you're at church and you're saved, you can make it. Okay, I didn't have parents pushing me to church. When I decided to go to church, it's because when I was really 12th grade age, I just decided I'm going to church. I'm going to go. I'm going to serve God. I'm going to be serious about this. No one pushed me. I went by myself many times. That's just how it was. Okay, and so we can do that. Number four. Now these last few, we're going to get involved in just some practical aspects. Allow your teen to be part of the church group. Allow them to. We do what we can to keep our teens away from bad influences, and yet sometimes we will even keep them away from what could be a good influence. How can we do that? A, be faithful to all the church services. You say, well, I know somebody. They were faithful to all the church services, and they got older, and then they walked away from God. That's on them. But I'll tell you what, a lower percentage of those are going to do that than those who don't come to church very faithfully. I am not going to teach my children that church is just something you show up to every now and then, and if you have a good excuse, you miss. Grandma's having a birthday party, okay? Or whatever it is. You know, I have something better to do. By the way, we're out of town. When we're out of town, I try to set the example. We still go to church, and we go to Sunday school, okay? And we're there early, and that's probably a me problem. But that's just how it is. And so we just set the example. Be at Thursday, let them be at Tuesday, Thursday soul winning. All of our teenagers ought to be here for soul winning on Thursday. Okay? Listen, they're learning how to be unashamed about their faith. They're learning and say, they don't know how to share their faith. I know, but over the course of going for a while, they'll learn how to share their faith. And you see people saved, that's going to help your heart. Go to the Christian school. The odds of making it as a Christian in a public school are extremely low. It can be done. If a teenager has parents who absolutely will not let them go, I believe God can give you the grace to make it. But a Christian parent who simply won't put their kid in a Christian school because they don't want to do it, you're treading on dangerous ground. Our Christian schools our public schools are just, actually, let's not call them public. Let's call them what they are, government-run schools. They're not good. They're not good. I saw a little video clip today, and they were talking about, someone was talking about classes that are offered at some college universities around the country. And it's just, and they're ridiculous. We have a Christian school because we realize how hard it is when they're at that impressionable age to be in a situation where they're constantly going to be bombarded. What is it? The schools are doing something where they're having some type of day where they're going to have all the kids close their eyes, walk in circles, and pretend they're another gender. Now, some of the parents found out about that and threw a hissy fit. Okay? Now, I don't think that was in California, although it's probably coming to a school near you soon. But that's the kind of stuff they tell them. And they're very impressionable. I'd rather have them in a place where the Bible is at least lifted up and taught. Let them go, letter D, to activities, youth conferences, and camps. The conferences and the camps are very key. Any of our teenagers that have really, really made it, they can go back to the years and think of things that they decided when they were just up at a camp, away from everything, and heard some message that spoke to their heart. Let them go. Letter E, get them involved in giving and giving campaigns. Now, that's not just there because the building campaign is coming up. But I just think back to all the campaigns we had and our kids in the past being involved and selling candy, selling stuff from our garage that they were not supposed to sell, things of that nature, okay? You know, raiding penny banks and all the stuff. Listen, what does that tell them? Hey, this is my church. I want to be a part of what's going on and be invested. Number five. This is a big one, okay? I want you to hear me out. Encourage your teens to be involved in ministry. Now, I'm just going to be honest. That's my job. By the way, when I say I'm just going to be honest, that doesn't mean the other times I've not been honest, okay? It's a euphemism. It's a figure of speech. But because I have been honest, to be really honest, about 60% of the time so far tonight. So I'm trying to work on that percentage as we go. But I will say this. I think this is an area that has slipped a little bit. Used to be just about every one of our teenagers was involved in some type of ministry. And you do things. I'm not saying you don't, but I'm going to be real specific here. As I mentioned earlier, in our days of a church, it was our teenagers that ran everything. It helped them a lot to become a solid spiritual adult. We had them work in the nursery. They taught Sunday school. They ushered. They'd set up for the services. You name it, they did it. Now, let me give you two thoughts. First of all, get them on a bus route. I'll just be real honest with you. When they're of age, every teenager in our church ought to be on a bus route. I'll just be honest with you. Used to be that way. I think some of us have pulled back a little bit on that. Okay? And they ought to be here on Saturday mornings at 9:30, be at the meeting, and get out on a bus route. Look, what are the two greatest commands in the Bible? Love the Lord thy God with all your heart, mind, soul. Okay? It's a personal thing. It's devotion. That's all that stuff. What's the second one? Love your neighbor as yourself. How are they going to learn that? They go soul winning, but being on a bus route. Now, I'll be honest. Some of the bus routes and some of the places where they go, they're going to see stuff that is going to shock them. I remember, I'll never forget, I found these kids when I was a bus captain years and years ago. And I went, where do you live? And they went up to the house. It was two families living together in a house. It was two single mothers and five kids. This is where they lived. I walked into their house. On one wall, they had hand-painted a picture of Satan. Horns, the whole nine yards. On the other wall, they had something I could not say publicly. It was that bad. Now, I don't want my kids to see that, and that's very rare. Remember one time Allison, when she was on a bus route, she came home and she was telling me, she was a teenager, you know, and they were trying to get one of the kids on the bus, and the mom was mad at the child and came out and cussed the kid out, and I mean, the cuss words, Allison didn't repeat them. Okay, she gave me some initials, and my wife interpreted for me. Now, did I want Allison hearing that type of stuff? No, but you know what? I think she was seeing the type of lifestyle that comes with that kind of stuff. And by the way, and then a heart of compassion for those kids. Sometimes these kids come, and by the way, the bus kids are going to, and all the children are going to behave when they're at church, right? But sometimes if you see the stuff people have to go through and what they're living in, kind of gives you a heart to say, hey, we need to be a little more patient here. All you teenagers, well, you know, I'm busy. Listen, we're not asking you to come all day on Saturday. You come out, you go for a few hours, you encourage somebody, maybe get to witness, whatever. Be out here. Get a heart for ministry. Get a heart for serving people. And so I hope you'll do that. Allow them, letter B, to help around the church. Whether it's church days or whatever. I remember when Stephen was like sixth grade. During the summer when school was out, I'd be and I didn't tell him to do this, but He just got it, you know. I'd get in the car to get ready to come to work in the morning, and he'd just always be out there ready. I think Tim was out here too at that age. And he just came out here, and they would just do work around the church until I went home each day. Did that every summer from that time until he was done with school. Yeah. And so now, you know, now he has a company making that, you know, he kind of does that kind of stuff. But the point is, it's okay for them to help. They're going to sit at home and do what, you know? Play Galactic Space Chickens? I don't know. You know, Fortnite, whatever that is. Okay, the Fortnite. Okay. Number six, and allow me to go a couple minutes over tonight. I'll start speeding up as we get here. Number six, push them to the right music. Music has a direct connection to the heart and the mind. Okay? Having a love for proper music will develop your heart for God. It's hard to have a love for music and sing that music and really have it marinating in your mind and in your heart and then think bad things. But if you're listening to the wrong kind of music and that's getting in your mind and your heart, you're going to think bad things or whatever emotion that comes with that. Let's work on that. Letter A, musical instrument lessons. I would encourage all of you to have your children take some type of musical instrument lesson, honestly. Say, well, what if they don't become, listen, some of our kids, they've all taken them, and some it for several years, and they did it, and it just really didn't stick, but they took it for a while, okay? It just, some get it, and some it just doesn't resonate, but they took it. And let your children, look, encourage them. And when they do take it, encourage them to practice and so forth. But that's going to help them to have a love for music and the right kind of music. Piano lessons, you name it. Electric guitar, we need one of those. We need a drummer. Dude. Okay. Letter B, singing in our various choirs. Let them be in the school choirs. Typically on Thursday nights, it's our teenagers. One of our teenagers or a group sing, and occasionally the youth choir. But listen, let them get in choirs. Let them do the music. And you teenagers, take this stuff seriously. Get them in Patch the Pirate on Sunday nights. If they have any type of musical skill, push them to use their gift. And then watch what they listen to. And I'll say it, and I don't apologize for this, and I'll say it till the cows come home, and even after they come home, okay? You will never rise above the level of the music you listen to. You never will. Your Christianity is never going to rise above your music. You can come to church 100 times a week, and you get in the car and you listen to garbage, that's where your level's going to be. I'm just sorry. Number seven. Be careful about technology. We cannot be clueless in this area. And I've said it, and some of you want to disagree with me, and I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just throwing it out here. No teen needs a phone, cell phone. They don't. And I know, and by the way, if some of you disagree with that, that's fine. I'm not going to take you to task on it. But let me say this. This isn't just preacher point, something to get up here and throw a fit on. Just, you know, I need something to be mad about. Let me talk about a cell phone. That's not what it is. It's about what I talk about in the office. It's about when we're dealing with problems and bad things that come up, it's always a cell phone. Always that type of nonsense. I'm sorry. They're not... Don't let your kids fool you. They are not mature enough to handle it. The fact of the matter is a lot of adults struggle. But be careful. You got a flip phone, Robert? Okay. Hey, offer up. Be careful. Now, I could say this. Probably 90 to 95% of the teen problems that we deal with, in some way or another, phone or internet is connected. Either a connection point or this or that or the other. I'm just telling you, it's bad. And parents, sometimes we don't understand technology. I like technology. I got in early. I'm like, I'll use it. But we cannot be clueless. Okay? What you're doing is, we all have temptations. I get it. But what you're doing is giving them something where the temptation can be a lot closer. And then what we say is, well, you know, my teenager, I need them to get a hold of me. Listen, if they're in the right places with the right people, there's always going to be an adult there with a cell phone. If they go on one of our youth activities, they will be able to use the cell phone. And by the way, if there's an emergency on one of our activities, our adults are going to be on top of it, and we'll get a hold of you right away. Please, not, so but just be very careful. I wouldn't give them a phone. Our kids, it's like 18. And if I feel you don't deserve it at 18, you're not getting it at 18. I'm meaner. This isn't just a mean. I think it's a I'm an insurance tightwad. They don't even get their license till they're 18. It's like, why? Because have you seen my insurance bill? Are you serious? If you have money, go for it. B, no teens need social media. By the way, can I help you with something? Children, adults, if they're in our school, they can't have social media. Now, am I saying social media is not wrong? Cell phones are not wrong. They're just immature right now. They don't need that. And the whole point is let them be teenagers. These open doors that leads to things that are dangerous. C, be careful about the use of iPads and computers. Here, Mijo, take the iPad and you're over there and no one's watching what you're doing. Okay? You got to be very, very careful about that. And you're, there's nothing bad. Listen, these teenagers, you're a lot smarter than sometimes we give you credit for. You know how to get around things. Okay? Use that ingenuity for good, please, not for bad. You know. Be very careful. By the way, we have a society now where we give children phones to keep them quiet. We didn't give our children a phone to be quiet. You know, whenever we buy cars, we'd always get these, because we have to have big cars, we have a lot of family. But most of our cars always had those DVD players. I only allowed them to use those when we went on long trips. That's it. They brought DVDs and they watched in the car on long trips because it's a long trip. Not when we're going to the store, not when we're going to this. I just didn't want them to get used to have to always have something blaring in their face 24 hours a day. Okay? And that's just a thought. No big deal. Number 8, shelter them from guy-girl relationships. Now, let me say something to our college students here. Make sure this is on. We're not talking about you. Okay? When you graduate and you get a diploma, it'd be nice if you were close to getting a ring. Okay? Some of you I'm getting a little concerned about. Maybe we will have that in college. Everybody close your eyes. Spin in a circle. Okay? Pretend you're married. All right. Listen, teenagers don't need, by the way, if they have cell phones and they have iPads, they're sneaking around a lot of times with boys and girls. It's just a problem. Now, why? Are you against boys and girls being together? No. But come on. 25-year-olds are barely ready for relationships sometimes. Do you think a 14, 15, 6, you know what? You know what I want for our teenagers? I want them to be teenagers. Let's not worry about that stuff. You know, you're not mature enough to have, and by the way, I know we hear somebody, oh, I found the love of my life when I was 12. Okay. Come see me when you're 70 and tell me you still believe that. But, you know, look, okay, that's 1 in 100. By the way, if they're boyfriend and girlfriend at 13, are they going to wait until they're married? That's hard. We're putting a temptation in front of them. Let's help them, okay? Let them just enjoy being teenagers, and then when you get to college, we'll push you. You can find the right one. All right, number 9. Always encourage them in their relationship with the Lord. Anything your young person likes to do, wants to do that's spiritual, let them. Several years ago, we had one of our I'm gonna be sensitive here. They were struggling a little spiritually. They had for several years, and they were actually turning the corner and doing good, and they wanted to do something spiritual. And the parent who went to our church called me in my office and was mad that they were pushing towards spiritual things. And I'm like, now, hasn't there been a lot of issues at home? Yeah, and that's kind of changed. I'm like, they just didn't want them to go too far. Okay, listen, if they want to do something spiritual, they're going, fan that flame. Fan it. Okay, don't put it out. And then number 10, we're done. Have as your goal that they find, follow, and fulfill God's will for their life. And let me just say this. Parents, that ought to be our goal. God entrusted the children to us as parents to raise. And our goal for them ought to be for them to be and do whatever God wants them to do, whatever that is. Okay? Let's let them find that. They come home and say, you know what? I feel God wants me to be a missionary. Don't say, I don't want you to be a missionary. I have a job picked out for you. Listen, if that's what God wants. Now, let me say this. Brother Ross, several years ago, and I'm done. This is the last thing. It's not even a point. I asked Brother Ross, several years ago, he went through some of our teenagers throughout the years who have made it through youth group, and they're really serving the Lord, and they're solid spiritual adults. And he asked them, tell us some of the things that helped you through your teenage year. Here's the list. He gave me this list after I had already put this together. First of all, parents. Not parents who walked on water, because parents who walk on water sink. Parents who were not perfect, but they strove to be faithful to God. Their pastor, having a relationship with the pastor and the youth pastor. Leaders that cared. In other words, people in the church that, whether it was a Sunday school teacher, a Christian school teacher or something, really cared about them and took an interest in their life. Godly relationships. developing relationships with other teens who were serious about God. Involvement in the church and church functions. Being involved. Serving in ministry. Seeing God do amazing things. In other words, as they just served in the church and they saw God doing something. And then, of course, the number one thing is they had a relationship with God. Okay? Now, teenagers take a lot of heat. Millennials get a lot of take a lot of heat. Okay? And I get it. When we say millennials, we're not talking. But can I just tell you something? Teenagers are great. And teenagers, you have a lot to offer God. And by the way, you don't have to wait till you get out of school to do it. You just walk with God, strive to do the right thing. God can do something in your life. And so let's all work together to encourage our children and our kids as they're coming up just to serve God and be faithful to Him. So that when they get out of high school, when they get out of college, they go to college, regardless of what God has for them, they're solid Christians serving God and reaching people. All right, let's pray. Father, we do thank you for loving us. We thank you for